Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up the world, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge for a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when life and on the air.
Good morning, everyone. This is MJ Network. This is Fran Lewis, your host, and it's gorgeous outside. I guess the rain forgot to come today, which is fantastic. And I have four absolutely award-winning, fantastic authors that are going to deal with a really wild topic. We have Charles Salzberg, R.G. Belsky, Tom Walsh, and Davin Goodwin. Good morning, everybody. So glad that you're here to join me for this. It's going to be fun, I could tell you now.
Good morning. Thanks, Fran.
Hi, all. Hello.
Well, this is different. You know, everybody writes a great murder, serial killer, whatever, but you guys write them really great. So how do you creating a panel to discuss how you create your killer, how your killer decides who they're going to knock off, which is the best part of the thing, and is this someone your main character wants to settle a score with, and why? And I've just looked up a whole bunch more questions for the end of the show as to defining what a psychopath is. I'm really getting good at this. So who wants to start? How would you define, how do you choose your killer? How do you create this person? And how does this person decide, I'm going to get rid of this person because I don't like him or as a family member? How do you decide that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll start if anybody, I'll go ahead and start if nobody else, R.G. Belsky here. You know, for me, Fran, it really differs from book to book because I've had books in which the killer is killing for a motivation or a specific reason to get ahead. But in my current book that just came out, The Last Scoop, I mean, he clearly is a psychopath. It involves a serial killer who's murdering people over a long period of time, over many states. And, you know, who's killing really just for the sake of killing, which is, you know, always an interesting concept as a journalist. You know, I covered Son of Sam and stuff. And that in many ways, is the scariest kind of killer because they're not killing for any even reason. They're just killing for the, you know, for the love of killing. But I don't know how the others feel about this, but I don't, you know, I never start out with the idea that, cause, I mean, I start out with my character, whoever the protagonist is, and then I try and figure out, well, what crime is she going to solve, Claire Carlson's going to solve. And in this case, I chose a serial killer. But like I say, in my books, I think it does vary from book to book.
I'll go to you, Charles. Actually, Fran, I don't have killers in my books. There are two, let's see, Swan's Last Song and Devil in the Hole. Both were before the book even started. There, in Second Story Man, there's a sort of off-screen murder, but one of the characters has something to do with it, he doesn't commit the murder. And so the way I use a killer is to set the story off, at least I have always, and to send it in a direction, because I'm not so much interested in finding a murderer. You know, I just finished a manuscript now where there is actually a murder in it, but it really is just a device to get the plot going. And yeah, you do find out, or you think you find out who committed it by the end of the book, but it's just not as important. And I will probably never write about a serial killer. Because there's so much out on it, and there's so many people who do it better than I would. I mean, someone like Dick, for instance, who has experience reporting that kind of stuff. Nothing new in it. So that's the way. You know, it's not that I don't have dead people in some of my books, but they're and they actually almost always get committed off screen, you know.
Well, Devin,
yeah,
or Tom, how did you decide on yours?
Well, for me, it started with the crime, actually, and I kind of built it from there. I wanted to keep it a mystery, so even when I start shouting, I kind of developed the character as I went along, and it was based on the crime, essentially. And then over time, this guy became a serial killer. And then you don't, of course, you don't find who he is to the very end. But by the time you get there, because of all the circumstances and the things that take place, you have a pretty good idea who, what type of person he is and why he was doing what he did.
That is so cool. I'm learning so much. That's why I one of these days maybe I'll attempt to do something like that, but I don't think so. You guys I mean, I could feel kill off somebody, but I don't know if I would do it the right way. So who else? There's one more person. Was that Tom just now or Devin?
That was Tom. Yeah, that was me.
Devin, Tom, go on. How do you choose your killer? Well, you had a yours is great. I mean, seriously.
This is Dave and Brand. I don't know if I really chose the character. I think it just kind of happened by accident. I've only done this once. I don't really have a formula or a way of doing it. I just, my book's about revenge, basically. And so I thought, well, you know what? I am to just figure out what a person would do for revenge. How would they kill somebody that they were really mad at? Just kind of started happening. I don't have the experience that some of these other folks have, so I can't say that I have a formula or a way of doing it. It just kind of happened for me.
So does this killer that you guys have, this is an odd question I just popped in, does it target a particular age, group, or occupation, or has your main character ever been the target of the killer? Ever.
Yes, to both, because generally at some point you need to put your protagonist in danger. I mean, it's kind of that's kind of a good rule generally in a mystery. Otherwise, it's a little difficult in the series because you know, as people say, everybody's pretty aware you're not going to kill off your character probably, but you generally have the person in danger. But in terms of a specific thing, certainly in my case with the serial killer and. It's true of serial killers in really life too. They target a certain kind of person, and in my case, it's women. He's killing women, and he's killing surprisingly young, attractive women. He's not killing old, unattractive people. He's killing some people might go after young kids or whatever, but he's going after women because there's obviously a sexual component to the crimes, even if there's no sex involved. In other words, my killer is not having sex, but most serial killers don't. I mean, if you look at Son of Sam, he went after dark-haired women, but
there was
no sex involved, but there was obviously a sexual attraction for him. Most serial killers, even Ted Bundy. I mean, Ted Bundy, I think the only sex he had with his victims was mostly after they were dead, which was a whole other weird thing going on. So I think generally you have to pick a target like that. Certainly, if you're writing about a serial killer like I'm doing in this book.
What about you, Tom?
Yeah,
your book was
Tom.
Really different because you had terrorists and stuff like that. That was really good. I'm ready for the next one, by the way.
Okay. Yeah, this is Tom. Mine was going after priests. So after a while, you discover that these priests are disappearing, and this guy, of course, becomes a serial killer, and obviously the priests are of a certain age. There's a revenge factor, as you can imagine, with all the press of things going on in the church, what the motivation might be, but there's still a question as to who this guy is, and it goes from there.
Yeah, that is really true. Charles, how would you describe Henry Swann is one of my favorite characters because he's got humor, and you never know what he's going to do. So how does he deal with the killer or obstacles that he faces? Because he's always facing the problem of getting back where he starts. They don't want to let him go. See, I got that. I love him.
Well,
I love this character. You can't retire him. Sorry, not gonna let him allow.
Thanks. Well, you know, I think that I don't know about the two other guys in the background, but I know Dick's pretty well because he's a good friend, and I'm from journalism, and I actually came from journalism too, even though reluctantly. Mm-hmm. And I always saw the Swan character really as a journalist, because that's kind of what journalists do, is they you know, pick a story and then they go research it and find out everything they can and then distill that and then write it. So it's a really good question you ask, friend. No one's ever asked me that question before.
Oh, gosh.
I see him as a journalist who happened to, you know, use those tools that he has to solve crimes or situations. So he doesn't come from the normal place that a lot of PIs come from, which is, you know, law enforcement or something like that. So he's much more he's very literate and he's much more logical. And so I was once on a panel, and I don't know why I got on this panel about weaponry, because I don't use weaponry. I don't know anything about weaponry, but I did. It made me think, and he kind of uses his mind as a weapon. That's how he looks. It's very logical, or tries to be very logical, and sometimes things are illogical. So that's how he deals with it, is kind of using the journalism tools.
That's interesting. And Tom, you how does Dawn and Kurt, I mean, I love them, seriously, how do they create a plan to solve murders or to solve situations? I mean, just think about COVID-19 and the virus in your book. That reminds me every single day that was amazing. How do you send them back in order to solve a crime like the high school?
Oh, you're talking about the latest series. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I got it memorized.
I was going back my first book, Bless Me, Father, which involves the priest. There's a serial killer. The trilogy doesn't really have a serial killer in it, though there are people dying for sure. As far as solving it, there's actually a priest himself who is a former attorney, and he decided to go into the Catholic Church, and so he becomes the investigator, and he goes back and investigates a crime, and he has some experience doing that because he was an assistant DA at one time. So he has very good investigative skills, part of that is he knows the history of the church. He knows he's got this criminal experience and history in that area, and he bumps up against the politics of the church and the politics of the city and the town he's in, and all of that comes into play. So it gets it kind of weaves a tangled web there, and it's a deep read in that sense.
That is very true. Now, this is another question that I come up with. In each of your novels, you have to decide who the target is, and why this person, and where the body is found, and who handles the case. How do you decide how the person's going to be killed, or who the person is that this person decided to kill? I always wondered about that. I mean, I've read just about I've read an awful lot of people, and in some people, you know, have so many different killers, you can't keep track. You need a scorecard. But how do you decide who the person is going to be killed? Is it someone that's hiding in plain sight? Is it someone that the killer just feels, well, you know, today I'm going to kill this person? That's a book I just finished. I won't tell you the name. The guy killed people because he wanted money. He didn't feel like going to work. And when he killed this lady's husband, she went and killed people too, and she killed the wrong people. So how do you decide who you're going to kill off? And how does this person decide how they're going to do it? I've always wondered about that. That's so interesting. Seriously.
Fran, I'm starting to worry about you.
Well, wait till you read my new book, if anybody wants to read it. What if you'll understand that a lot of people, during this pandemic, you begin to feel like you're closed in. Wait till you read this book, you'll really feel crazy.
Yeah, but you're on tape asking four writers how to kill someone. So
yeah.
It's a little suspect.
Well, I can't help it. It's just
not just
so
how, why.
I think you're giving us all, maybe at least me, too much credit, too, friend, because you're saying, like, how do you decide all this? And I don't know about the rest of you, but I don't really,
you
like,
do so
sit
well.
Down and decide it. You know, it kind of the flow of the story. You know, you kind of go with your story and see where it's going, and generally it becomes pretty pretty obvious what you're going to do. So it's really a matter of getting into the story and writing it. And to me, the best stories are where you can even surprise yourself. And I've known a lot of writers, you know, who've said that. I mean, Hank Felipe Ryan has talked about it in panels. It's like you surprise yourself by what you do and what the story and who gets killed or who lives and who dies. And when that happens, it's really great as a writer, and I like to think it's probably good for the reader too, because I think that makes it a good book.
Yeah, I wish I could say that I said this, Fran, but I didn't. A friend of mine said it. And that is, to me, and I totally agree, the worst thing you can do as a writer, right, is create a character who's there simply to die, to be killed.
Yeah.
I think that the reader gets it, you know, and gets it really early, and it's unsurprising. So I would agree what's been said is you don't so much choose who's getting killed as much as the character. If you've created a good character, a killer, he or she really makes the choice. Usually is you try not to make it an obvious one, I think. And again, for me, it's not so much about the killing, it's why the killing and what the implications of that are. So in Devil in the Hole, I based it on the John List case where he killed his entire family, which was five people and a dog. The only reason I wrote that book is I kept trying to figure out how someone could do something like that, plan it, not just go off, you know, crazy one time. He planned it very well. So for me, that's where the murder really stands out for me and why. I want to know why the person did it. And that's why I'm not so interested in serial killers, because Dick is right. There are all different kinds of reasons, and usually it has to do with power or, you know, abuse as a child or whatever. But those are things that there's not a choice. And if I'm going to deal with a killer, I want him to make it, for her, to make a choice. And I want to try to understand why he or she makes that choice.
Devin, your killer was really scared me because it didn't have a name. It was called The Neighborhood. How did you create this character, and how come I couldn't, I'm not going to tell you if I figured it out. Not really. But it was really like from the beginning of the book, and I hear you hear the person's voice. How did you create, why did you create somebody called The Neighborhood? The Neighbor, The Neighborhood. That was so good.
Yeah, well, a total credit for that, because that whole thing about creating an antagonist who hasn't got a name but more of a moniker.
Yeah.
I stole that from James Patterson's done that a couple of times, and a good writing friend of mine, Joe Conrad, he's done that in a couple of his books. So I thought, well, it's just kind of interesting. To me, it kind of hides the identity of the person, so that going through the book, you're not really sure who the neighbor is, hopefully. And then it can kind of surprise the reader is what my goal was. And again, you know, it was a challenge and chapter was the very first one we're killing, and then the rest of it first from the protagonist's point. It was just a way for me to introduce the killer right off the bat and not actually identify him, just use him as the neighbor. We all have a neighbor, right? We all have that person that you know, it seems like a really good person, and you like, and they help you out, and no, maybe they're a killer. I mean, every serial killer I've ever heard of, then it's really found out that they were a killer. So,
Well, the son of me worked in a post office right near my house, and I had black hair. I didn't go out for a while. No, I'm serious. it was scary.
It was
right near my school. Yeah. I went to Columbus High School, and I was like, it's going to be, I wore a hat. Let's just put it that way. It was safer. So, and when you write your villain, was your villain always bad? Or was there something that happened that turned this person to decide he's going to kill anybody? Or she could kill, too. Most people use male, you know, killers. Sometimes you get a really good female killer. Like in the last book, the book wasn't great, but the female killer was interesting. So was your killer always bad? Or did there something happen in their life to make them want to kill people? Which in their case is a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously in Bless Me, Father, there, you can really just guess what the motivation might be. And so that's kind of known from the outset. It's the big question keeps on coming up. Well, who's doing this, you know? And in the process, you find out that there's this old cold case of a young girl who died at one point in time. And I think part of the intrigue as you go along in this book, what happened to her, and if she was killed, this has nothing to do with this, doesn't seem to have much in common with this serial killing that's going on. So in that sense, I think, I hope that, you know, the reader's always trying to, kind of compensate for that. And continually ask the question, well, I understand why these priests are getting killed, and they're getting killed in different manners. They're not always getting killed in the same way. And the way each one of them is killed has something to do with what had happened prior in their lives with the victim. And again, there's this outstanding cold case that kind of slides into the picture, and it keeps you guessing, or at least I hope it keeps the reader guessing throughout.
I didn't read that one, but just go on, Dick.
I was going to say, in my book, the current one, it's clearly a case of the person is bad from the beginning. I do try and deal a little bit with his young life, where his father had left when he was a young boy. His mother was like an addict. And so there is that. But I'm not, you know, I don't know that that's clear that what turns him into the killer that he is. And you know, in doing this, I spent a lot of time reading about two of the most famous serial killers, Son of Sam and Ted Bundy. And it's interesting because when you look at Son of Sam, you could sort of see the background that led to what he did, because he had a very unhappy childhood. He was a miserable person. Nobody liked him. You know, he was the kind, and this was a way of lashing out. But then you take Ted Bundy, it was a different kind of thing. Now, there were issues, you know, in his early life, but, I mean, he was this good-looking guy. He was smart. He went to law school. He had girlfriends. Women loved him, you know, and he just did not seem like the kind of person that would turn into a killer. But for him, it was all about the power of killing and all that. So, certainly in this book, I'm not writing about somebody who's killing for a reason. I mean, you can do that, and actually can make an interesting character. Like if you have somebody who has been wronged in some way and then turns into a killer, you know, maybe there's a way of developing that the reader can sympathize in some way with how he got that way. But in this book, I don't do that.
I think that at the very least, I think the writer has to know the background of the killer, or that killer becomes a stereotype. And so I think it is important to know what drives people, but that's what I'm interested in anyway. So for instance, in Second Story Man, he doesn't kill, but he's a crook. I mean, he's a thief. He's not a nice guy. And as I was writing it, I realized that I had to know why he was doing these, or else it wouldn't work. It wouldn't make sense. If it didn't make sense to me, so I had to create a background, and it is written about in the book, so that people could understand. So, f- for instance, when Devil in the Hole came out, I did a class out, a college class out in on Long Island for Ken Wishnia, who's a friend of mine who teaches out there. And when I came in, this young woman, she's sitting, raised her hand. And remember, this is about not a serial killer, but a mass murderer. He killed his entire family. She raised her hand and she said, "I really feel guilty, but by the end of the book, I started to feel a little sorry for the killer." And that was the best thing that was ever said about that book, because I wanted people, I wasn't condoning this horrible crime, but I wanted the reader to understand what could drive someone to do that. So that's how I feel about it, is that you really do have to know, even with serial killers, I mean, you know, they don't come out of nowhere.
Mm.
What?
Did anybody ever have somebody that actually empathized with the killer and said, yeah, he was right? Or they hated the victim and it doesn't matter, so the person's dead? Did they ever write that in a review? I mean, I've written so many reviews, I've lost count. Did anybody ever really empathize with the bad guy? That, oh my God, he was this, he went through that, so it's okay that he's doing it?
Right, I think empathy is different from condoning. So I think that, I can empathize with a killer, but I can't condone the act of killing in almost every circumstance. I mean, you know, there's always that thing, oh, if you had a chance to kill Hitler, would you have? So it's hard to make, I think, blanket statements about it.
That's different. So a great villain is remorseless, relentless, ruthless. Does your character is he a good liar? Or it has to feel like he's in control? What characteristics would you say that the people that you write about, your villains, have? I'm learning a lot here. This is really good.
I think intelligence for me is a big thing. That's not one you mentioned. I like it when the killer is really smart and intelligent and really good at what they do. And I think, you know, my character, I mean, you go back to like something like a great movie like Basic Instinct, you know, and the Sharon Stone character. I mean, she's this really, she's a killer, but she's a really smart, brilliant killer who's killing people.
Mm.
So I just think to have a formidable opponent is important. And that's why someone like Son of Sam doesn't really work in a fiction book, because Son of Sam was not intelligent, whereas a character like Ted Bundy was more. I whenever I do one, I want to make sure that the bad person is all those things you said are important, but to me you really want them to be intelligent and cunning about what they do, and almost as intelligent as your protagonist, just not more intelligent, otherwise you know, it would end badly. But they need to be a good match.
And they also have to have this crazy charm that people just want to be near them, like you said with Ted Bundy. They know they couldn't, you know, get away from him. So sort of like his looks did help him to kill people, I think. So anybody else, does your characters show any empathy? Does anybody feel like, oh, the character has no emotion or anything? Or do you have any respect for this guy that's killing people?
Yeah, I think the priest killer, once it becomes known in the community that the priests are dying, there's kind of some support in the community. Well, these guys deserve it, because it starts coming out that, you know, they're all guilty of crimes. And so, there's a lot of empathy for them. And hey, what better way to clean up the church, you know?
And getting rid of the bad guys. Dick, in your book, Claire, in the last one, she comes face to face with the killer. How does the main character deal with when they're in danger themselves? And nobody's allowed to kill off the main character, because I said
that's, like I said, that's the balance.
Somebody
you want to put
that.
Them in you want to put them in danger, but obviously, you know, you're not going to unless you're going to end the series. But so she has a climactic confrontation with it, and one of the things she winds up doing is, and this is a problem in with all my characters, Jenny, because I write about media characters. Charles was talking about murders and weapons, but one of the things I do, I have murders, but my characters aren't law enforcement, so they don't carry a gun or anything like that. And so the question is, how do you have a climactic scene? I mean, you know, it's not just her sitting at a computer and writing a story. That's not going to be very interesting. So there generally has to be a way that she's able to get into a confrontation at the end that involves, you know, the threat of violence. And in most of the time, it'll happen that she obtains a gun, or she gets the gun, or the gun drops and there's a struggle for the gun. Mm-hmm. Or something like that. But it's that's not a problem if you're writing about a police officer or even a private detective, because normally they can pull out their gun and deal with it. So there is a confrontation, a violent confrontation at the end of The Last Scoop. But I have to be a bit original to figure out how to set that up.
No, it's interesting. But she's got somebody that sort of keeps her centered sometimes. She has a friend that keeps her centered, because sometimes at the end of the book you wonder if these people need some, you know, psychological help, poor things, after going through all
that. Usually it's the writer who needs the psychological
help.
Yeah,
or the author, yeah.
I know, and I'm beginning to wonder you have to read my new book, you'll get the point. It scares me that I even wrote it, but it's different.
But, you know, Fran, people always say to me, and, you know, in all these events, they'll say, like, you know, well, why? I like Claire, but why is she so crazy? Why isn't she more normal? And, you know, the
That's
answer
why
is,
you love
cause if
her.
She was normal, yeah, if she was normal, she'd be boring. You know, if she was just an average person. So you need to have those flaws and those problems in the person. I think all of us, you know, all of us share that.
I agree with you, because otherwise I would probably put the book down after just 5 seconds and not read it. And that's been happening lately to some of the books.
Well,
I've been getting.
I always tell, just real quick, I always tell a story about this, and it involves a friend of Charles and mine both, which is Reed Fell Coleman. And the first time I met Reed, I was on a panel with him, and it involved characters and writing characters. And he was talking about one of the most difficult characters to write was Jesse Stone, the Robert Parker character that he had written a number of great books about. And the reason why, because Jesse Stone is such a perfect guy. You know, he's a tough, he's honest, he's smart, and most of all, he looks like Tom Selleck. Because when you're reading the books, you're thinking about the movies with Tom Selleck. So the trick, Reed said, was, you know, you've got to give him the flaws. You got to give him the bad marriage. You got to give him the failed athletic career. You got to give him the drinking problem, you know. But that to me, that is so much of the key of creating the good character. Somebody that's likable, but they got to have those flaws.
What about you, Devin? Your main character, he's unique, that's for sure.
Well, I try to stay away from cliches, kind of like what Dick just said. You don't want to be
I like Roscoe,
too...
though. He's really good.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, and it's kind of funny because when I was writing about Roscoe, I actually did picture Tom Selleck as the person. So that's kind of...
That's hilarious.
To be honest with you, I had just read the entire Jesse Stone series up to that point when I first started writing the book, and for some reason the Tom Selleck character was just in my mind, and so that was the first person I actually pictured. He's unique. I mean, it was one of those things where you talk about, you know, he's not in law enforcement. He's retired, but he's not in law enforcement. So how does he have this big confrontation at the end? How does he handle the fact that he doesn't want to be involved in any of this stuff? He just wants to live his life retired on a Caribbean island, drawn into all these things. So I tried not to make it cliche. I think those are.
It's different. And Tom, your character, Dawn and Kurt, they're original. I mean, seriously, they're very original. How did they come up with things to solve from the past to the present? And I'm trying to figure out how Dawn looks in the past as opposed to the present. Or does she look the same and just different or younger?
Yeah, they're almost We're talking about the trilogy now, the DM trilogy. And
that's the one I read. You're going to have to send me the other one.
Okay, I will. She's almost identical, except for a few things that happen, mm-hmm. that things are off in the parallel universes. But I think it shows that how one act or one circumstance has all these linked connections, and a lot can change just due to one person missing in a timeline, or a certain circumstance turns out is different in one reality than the other, and then a whole set of other things are different because of that. I think one mm-hmm. example was in one reality, we have John Lennon is still alive because the shooter missed, and it all has to do with just moments and seconds, split second decisions, and as we see in the DM trilogy, it's technology too, because what worked in one parallel timeline that didn't work in the other, and as she kind of her consciousness kind of shifts between them, she's discovering what might work in this reality may not work in this one, and vice versa. So I like to think that that keeps the intrigue at a higher level.
I was hoping that you could follow the COVID-19 with Dawn and Kirk in the next, and move back and not have the virus up front. I thought about that. I go, like, how did he know? I mean, seriously? It was unbelievable. So, the timing was, like, unbelievable, yeah. So would anybody ever have, I mean, James Patterson does this, and I really wish he would send me more of his books because I only get a couple, hint. Would you ever have a killer that gets away with it and comes back? Or somebody that you think is arrested and comes back? Would you ever have a reoccurring person, bad person? Because that would be really cool.
I can say yes, because I'm in the middle of writing that, and that is...
oh, good.
It's a sequel to Second Story Man, but a spinoff.
Oh, nice.
I'm focusing on Francis Hoyt, who is the bad guy, who, spoiler alert, manipulates himself away from the problem he has at the end of the book. But I didn't write that book thinking there would ever be I would ever write about that character again. But he was so fascinating to me and to people that I thought, oh, maybe he deserves his own book. And so, yes, I'm bringing him back.
I don't like something when people leave it completely open at the end. But what I have done and what a few other people that I've liked have done is when you sort of leave the hint. So like you might have the bad person dead, or you're pretty sure he's dead, but there's no body, and so there's always this uncertainty. Like, well, could he be
mm-hmm.
back? And maybe the best serial killer book I've ever read, better than Hannibal Lecter or anything with Thomas Harris, the best is The Poet by Michael Connelly, which is a great, great book. And at the end of that book, spoiler whatever, you're not 100% sure that the killer's dead. You believe he is. He seems to be dead, but there's this hint that, that he might have somehow gotten away. So that's what I've done in a couple of previous books. That can be quite effective. But I'm not a fan. It's like if I'm watching a TV show and then at the end you get, oh, to be continued or something. I'm not a fan of that. I kind of like the idea that the story, basically wraps up in the book.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I would agree. I think that it smacks of, we know there's going to be a series. There's a cliffhanger at the end. I kind of am annoyed, as a reader, I'm kind of annoyed by that.
I know. I get that all the time. Then I ask the author when I write the review, is there going to be a sequel or you left it like that? And they say no. And I go, that's not fair. because here I am ready for the next, and it's left open, not open-ended. You want to read something really scary, Tomb of Gods by Brian Morland. He was on the show the other day, and I asked him if he's writing a sequel because the way he wrote the ending, he said, "We'll have to think about it now that I made him, you know." Said you have to write. Oh yeah, it's scary. But before I forget, those of you that are a fan of Alan Topol, The French Revenge takes place on June 3rd. On the 8th, Jeff Bond, Pine Box for Vendetta. On the 10th, Salt the Snow. It's about a real newscaster during World War II. It was interesting. On the 15th, we have Emilio's Garden, an author from Costa Rica. And on the 17th, oh, yes, we have Golden Dawn.
Again, yeah.
Hopefully. Hopefully.
If you get the book, as long as you get the book, yeah.
If I get the book, you know, I read Alan Topol's book came the other day. I just sat down and read it. I strained galore, but it was worth reading. I just sat down and read it because I have to interview him next week. The 22nd, Enemies of Doves. The 24th, we have another panel show. We're going to talk about voice that day. And on the 29th, we're going to end it in a very calm note with Pastor Michael Jones. We're going to talk about stress and anxiety during the COVID crisis. And that's just some of what's coming up. And I'm actually waiting for the author, the publicist for Mike Madden, the new Clancy book, to get back to me with a date for an interview somehow. You never know with me. So what is your favorite, which of your favorite villains was your favorite? And would you, if you had to write it over, would you let this person get away? That's just my thought.
Well, this is David. I've only had one killer, so he has been my favorite. and I, if I had to do it over, I wouldn't change anything. I would still have the same ending that I have.
I'm very much into being into the book that I'm doing. So my favorite killer right now would be the one that is in my current book that I'm doing. But I probably would have said the same thing from previous books. I just find when I'm writing, it's really important for me to be sort of into the book to the point that I'm not thinking about other books or future books or anything, mm-hmm. but just focusing on it. So I think any book that I'm working on at that point, whoever I'm creating, to me is my favorite person. I am one of those people who I said earlier, I'm generally not a fan of having the killer get away at the end or having uncertainty. I generally like to wrap up the story within the book.
Devin, you're writing the sequel to this, aren't you? You're writing another one, aren't you, I hope?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So yep. do you have a different killer, right? So the killer of the first book is not the same as the second book. So which one do you like better? Which one am I going to like better?
I think there are two different types of killers and for two different reasons. I think the second book, the one I'm working on right now, I really like to think that it's better, a little more sophisticated in the way things happen. I'm hoping. I kind of tend towards the second book as being, you know, kind of maybe more of a favorite. But if I could ask the other writers one quick question,
sure.
You know, in talking about the killers that get away and come back later, what I'm struggling with an idea moving forward about killer doesn't get away. You know, the killer is caught and apprehended and sent to prison or whatever, but can they resurface in a future story? That's to me, you know, the sort of conclusion and a satisfying end, but later that person comes back. So that's the thing I'm struggling with right now. I'm kind of glad you brought that up, Fran, because that's what I'm struggling with in a future book.
Yeah, well, could the killer escape from jail? Could somebody help him get out?
That's the question.
I know.
Well, there's various ways of approaching that. I wrote a book a number of years ago called Playing Dead, in which I came up with an idea that I liked, in which I had a serial killer, or a person who killed a lot of people, who's actually executed. But the killings continue after he dies because he basically you know, kind of like in a Charles Manson way, gets followers, and is able to have somebody else kill after his death, and he sort of announces before his death, "You can kill me, but I will live on with all these other murders." You know, so there are various ways you can do that. You know, you can have the person escape, you can have them have an accomplice outside who's doing it. Mm-hmm. There's no right or wrong. You know, if it's interesting, I think it works.
Pratt, let me give you an example, and it's not from one of my books, but it goes to your question. And there's a writer by the name of David Joy who wrote a book called The Line That Held Us. And this is the setup. There's a guy in the Appalachian area, and there's a guy who's going out hunting, and he's hunting on land that he doesn't own and that he shouldn't be on. It's private property. But he knows that the landowner is away. And so he's hunting, and so he takes a shot at what he thinks is a deer, and he goes down and he finds that he's killed someone. So he's a killer, right? But he didn't mean to do it. But the complication is that he's killed the brother of the town bully. So even though it was an accident, and it could be proved probably that it was an accident, he knows mm-hmm. that he's in danger from this bully because of who he is. That, to me, is a really interesting killer. And that's the kind of killer who, you might root for him to get away with it. So I think it always depends upon the circumstances mm-hmm. that good writers, and you've got a bunch here, can almost do anything. And, I mean, frankly, I live to irritate people. I mean, you know, if they're irritated at the ending of one of my books, that makes me feel because it means that they didn't, you know, they couldn't predict what was going to happen. So I think it's a really good question, and there are like lots of answers, and it depends on the book mm-hmm. and the writer has created the story.
That's true, because sometimes you actually feel that the killer might be justified in doing what he did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and you might say, "Good for you."
Right. In this case, it was an accident, but the guy shouldn't have been on that land in the first place.
Yeah.
Nor should the guy, mm-hmm. by the way, killed. He had no business there either.
That is so cool. So, what's my next thought? Oh, my goodness. Which of the main characters, if your killer could speak out, any one of them, what would the message to listeners say if you decide to bring them back, or if they could speak out, if they want to plead their case and say, you know, I'm not guilty, or I really didn't mean it, or it's just too bad because I'm really good and I fooled you, what would your killer say to say that made him or her a great killer? We have a few more minutes. I thought that would be interesting. It's different.
One, I'm thinking the message is being given in the murders themselves. So as I was saying earlier, each killing is done differently, and it's done in an interesting way. There's one in particular where a priest is found like tied to an umbrella weight, you know, and he's found at the bottom of a pool in a retirement home where priests have retired. And the police are investigating that, and they get a message in that, and that's like the first sign that this guy, he's communicating to everybody through the way he kills these people. So it's nonverbal, but it's very very visual.
That is interesting. I wonder how many real killers today, the one before they arrest them, say, well, you know, they had it coming, or they really deserve that, or I don't care. That's mm-hmm. kind of scary. So the mm-hmm. ending of the book is the other thing. That is probably the hardest thing that I have trouble writing, like, you know, the end of the book. So my new book, two endings I leave for the reader to decide how it should end. Not really, seriously, I did. And so how do you create your finale or your ending so that the reader, you know, finds out who did it, and then they go, oh, my God, you got to be kidding. And without giving any spoilers, how do you create it so that the person is getting heart palpitations while they're reading it, like me?
Well, the trick, you know, the trick in doing it is, you know, obviously is the basic problem any author has is you have to have the reveal at the end. Well, this is the killer and this is what he did and how. I mean, it has to be startling to the reader, but at the same time, it can't come out of left field. So you have to have left clues along the way. And the ideal situation would be, you know, like you the reader reads it and they go, oh my God, I never saw that coming. And then if they go back in the book, they'll say, oh wait, he said this here or this then. And that's a tough balance too. I mean, the one example of that that I thought was really good in this is a movie is the, you know, the Bruce Willis movie, The Sixth Sense. I went, this is before social media, so I saw that movie, had no idea the trick at the end. Got to the end, I went, oh my God, I never saw that coming. And then when you watch the movie again, you're like, well, how come I didn't see this? There are all these clues along the way. So as an author, that's the really important thing you need to do. Shock the reader at the end, startle the reader at the end, in most cases. But at the same time, play fair with the reader.
I do. It's rare in any one of your books that I figure out who did it, but sometimes I do. And the bad part is if I figure it out after the first chapter and go like, what? Sometimes it's just a word that the character says. And it said, oh, my God, I got this. And I said, do I have to read the rest of the book? Oh, my God. Well, for those of you that want to know what I finished recently, I am impressed. 902 pages of I Know This Much Is True by Wally Lamb. I finished that. And for those of you that want to know just how long my review is, probably longer than it should be, but that's just too bad because 902 gets 1,700 words, which is not something that I usually write. Tomb of Gods, The Last Scoop, a whole bunch of food. Oh, and by the way, Bruce Coffin said that he had an appointment today. He had to go, and unfortunately he couldn't make it. Otherwise, he would have been part of this. So what is your next challenge for your main character, and where can we learn more about you and your work, and when am I getting it so I could add it to my pile inside?
Well, with me, you can go to tomwalshbooks.com. And you'll see all my books up there. And then there's some clues and some hints about the latest one in the trilogy that's hope to have out by the end of the year.
Oh, good.
Fran, for us, we have another installment of the crime novella collection. The first one was Triple Shot.
Oh, good.
And this is called Third Degree, and it'll be out in October. And I finished a book in the fall, which I'm sending out now, called Canary in the Coal Mine. And then I'm working on Man on the Run. And you can, you know, find me on Amazon, or I have a website, or, you know, people have no trouble finding me.
No, everybody knows you, but when am I getting, what am I getting? And the people that write the trilogy, do they want to do another interview? Because things are filling up for some reason.
Well,
I have
a
couple in October already.
I don't know if you can handle the egos of Tim O'Mara and Ross Klavan.
Oh, don't
me.
Worry, but I got that. I can deal with it. No, I can't even. Some days I can't even deal with my own, which is not really there.
I'm at www.rgbelsky.com, and basically, so The Last Scoop just came out in May, and it's out in hardcover and also in ebook, there'll be another Claire Carlson in 2021 that I just finished, which will be the fourth in the series. And as you know, Fran, I also am writing a series of thrillers under the name of Dana Perry with a different character, and that next book called The Golden Girl will be out in June, and we'll be talking about that soon too.
And hopefully it'll show up on my doorstep. But don't worry, if it shows up the day before, I'll get it done somehow. I told you, it's my mother's fault. She made me read 10 a week and take notes on them. That's probably why I have Tom's book memorized just about. Seriously. And Davin, where can we find out more about you? You see what happened with Davin's book. Somebody put a promo on it, and I said I had to have it. Once in a while, I actually was interested. I said, wait a minute, I got to have that. And besides, where he had the book in the setting is so much nicer than where we are right now. So when is yours coming out, and where can we find out more about Roscoe?
So
website is davidgoodwinauthor.com. Okay. And I'm working on the second one. I don't write books quite as fast as these guys do. I'm much slower at it. So I probably won't until next summer sometime, maybe even next fall, depending on when Ocean View can fit it in. I think my biggest challenge is just trying to keep the laid-back island feel going during a book that has, you know, multiple murders and a lot of suspense in it. Hopefully, I think it means I just need to get back down to the island for a couple weeks and absorb a little bit of island time for a while.
Take my face with you while you're at it, because I could use some sun. And seriously. And I'm truly hoping that the governor opens up some more things next week, like my hairdresser, so that when I go on the radio, I look better. No, seriously, it's very depressing. Is there anyone that I left out? Charles, you told everybody where we could find you?
I did.
And Tom, you told everybody where we can find you. Okay. That is cool. Yeah. But I have a question. Seriously, now that you mentioned Ocean View, I have about 5 books inside that nobody knows I have that are coming out in October and November and whatever. And I love Ocean View. Okay. But how do you, a lot of the writers are asking me, when you want to submit something to Ocean View or any regular publisher, what do you have to do in order to get them to even look at it? I don't mean me, just other people.
Well, I mean, I can tell you, I don't quite know how Davin did it. Davin and I both are published by Ocean View.
They're great.
You know, in my case, it was through an agent, which I recommend that to people. People say, well, I don't need one or whatever, but I if you can get an agent, and it's not always easy to do it, it really opens a lot of doors. I believe, and I don't want to speak for them, I believe in it, the people who run Ocean View will look at a book. Like, a lot of publishers won't even look at a book that comes in directly. They'll just, they just send it back. I believe they will look at manuscripts directly. Don't quote me on that, but I have heard from people who reached out to them individually. But the best thing, the best thing with all these things always is go someplace to, like, a writer's, because I know, like, at Thriller Fest, which isn't happening this year, but the people that run Ocean View, Bob Goosen, who's the and his wife, Pat, I mean, Bob is there, and he listens to pitches from people, and, that's always, if you can do that, That kind of direct approach is always the best thing. But there's no real rules. You just keep pitching and you kind of hope you get lucky.
Yeah, sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. Also, Dick is doing this and Charles has done this and Cheryl's listening from Partners in Crime. She is listening right now and she is probably great because she doesn't know she's gonna when my book comes out. You get it first, kid. I have to do a tour with Partners in Crime. But I've also received a compliment yesterday from Isabella Blackthorne, said that they would do a tour for my book, too, because it fits hardcore, scary fiction. So that's something. But thank you so much. This has been fun, let me tell you.
Thanks, friend.
We're doing another one on June 22nd. I think I'm trying to think. Dick, are you in on that one too? Davin is. I know that.
I don't. What's it about?
June 24th. June 24th. You are.
I think I am. Yeah. I think I'm in. Yeah.
It'd be R.G. Belsky, Jim Nesmith, Davin Goodwin, Derek McFadden, and John Lansing. So far.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about voice and whatever else comes out of my mind, whatever. But, but I want to thank you to everybody. Stay safe. I know this pandemic is like, forget it. But these are the things that make me smile and they make me happy. And this way I feel like I'm doing something that's helping other people. Besides the healthcare workers that are doing a phenomenal job, there's everybody else that should be considered. So you see, in my mind, everybody is essential no matter what you do. That's just me. That's how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to thank everybody. Everybody have a great day and stay safe and bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, friend.